Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talkosphere. Welcome back to the episode of Evolve Spirit Radio. I am one half of your hosting team, Michael Brown.
And also on the line we have Mr. Taylor Hammond Foster. Taylor, are you there?
I made it. How's it going?
It's going great. So we are here. The internet is working. So
good.
You know, hopefully it stays that way. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. We'll go as long as we can. So for those of you tuning in tonight for your first time, welcome to Evolve Spirit Radio. If you're listening to this in the future, welcome also. This is where we talk about all things spiritual. We sometimes do meditations and sometimes we do other things. But usually we just talk a lot about a lot of different things, and hopefully you all will also join us for those conversations. You can always call in 347-326-9263, or you can join us in the live chat and post your questions there. Always a good time. And even if you're listening to this in the future, you can always send me like how you like the show, or like if you got anything from it. You know, you can send this to me at michael@michaelbrazel.com. You can find Taylor and I online on the interwebs. We're fairly easy to find. I'm at michaelbrazel.com and he's at taylorhammondfoster.com. So it's not that difficult to find us. Facebook.com/mbrazel and facebook.com/htfoster12. We have all kind of blogs and things out there, so look us up. You can find us wherever we are. If you want to make a donation to the show, because donations do go a long way to help keep this show up and running, as well as all the other wonderful projects that I do in the communities, like meetup groups and those kinds of things, you can do that at michaelbrazel.com on the services page. There's a donate button at the very bottom of the page. And that's it. That's all I have for the intro. So
there you go. Knock it out.
Yeah. You know, I'm getting pretty good at that. I sound like almost like a professional radio person when I do that, you know. I could almost get a job like at an actual studio, probably, you know.
Yeah.
I could be just that guy that reads the intro, you know.
I'm sure there's places in South Carolina for you that are looking for just your market right now.
Totally. I'm pretty sure there's people out there I can just go and do that kind of thing, you know? So what's going on in your universe right now? Like, what is going on?
Well, it's pretty much the same place it always is. Perpetual state of just feeling like I'm not doing enough and doing more than I can capably keep track of. But I've got less than 4 weeks left of school. The countdown has begun.
Awesome.
And that's the important part. So I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I just need to push through.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
But, yeah, it's just trying to find time to keep up with everything that I want to, and also to get everything done that I want to being out here in Chicago. So it feels like I've now got a time limit on the place that I'm at, and that's making me realize how much I'm missing from where I am right now. Like how much I haven't done living out here that I wanted to do before I came out.
Now you're like scrambling. Always,
yeah, exactly. But that's always the curse of moving to a new place or moving from a place. Is like, it's right at the very end that you realize all the little things that you want to do.
Yeah.
Crap, I could have done that. I should have done this. I should have gone there.
I mean, there's still stuff I never did in D.C. that I still, like, maybe this next time I go up, so they'll be there for such an extended period of time, I think I may do some of those things. Like, some of the museums, like, I've never been, you know? Like, there's still some monuments and stuff that I never went to. So I think I'm going to, like, do, like, a tourist day and just go do all the touristy things I never got to do when I was there as, like, a resident.
Perfect. That'll be the way to do it. I feel like I'm probably going to end up doing some of that this fall since I'm heading back to D.C. is the current plan. And then, for at least like 4 months. So just going to be hanging out there. Not going to be having too much on my plate, hopefully. So just kind of some downtime just to recoup and refigure out my life now that I've just kind of thrown things on its head with this program this year. So go do some museums, do some hiking, maybe start like biking and running into between D.C. and Alexandria. Those are
cool,
all things.
Cool. I found like this trail that goes from Alexandria all the way to like Georgetown.
Yeah. I think it goes, but isn't it the trail that goes all along the waterfront all the way down to Mount Vernon? George Washington.
Something like that. Yeah.
It's like a 12-mile trail or something. Awesome. So might have to
might try like run that.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be a good thing to work up to this fall.
So, like, how's your running going?
It's going better. Last week I went every weekday, Saturday and Sunday. I did not, but I was outside working at the climbing wall all day Saturday and all day Sunday. So I gave myself the benefit of the doubt on that one. And then this week, I went yesterday. I have not gone yet today. We'll say that. Maybe this podcast will motivate me to get out for a quick couple miles before I go to bed.
Yeah, you got to do it. You know, you just got to get out there and do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my whole motto behind getting – or this time around for getting my running back in order is just I'm just doing it 1 mile at a time. Like, for me, I know I'm capable of running a mile. Might not be the quickest thing, but I know that I can physically do that. So my goal is just get out there, do 1 mile. If I can do more, great. If I don't, I got out there for 1 mile, and that's the first step. That's better than just sitting at home on the couch. So that's kind of the approach that I'm taking for this one. It's just these small incremental things, and as time goes on, I can add more to my practice. But just trying not to overwhelm myself with trying to make these huge goals of, oh, I'm going to run a 5K every week, or I'm going to get out there and run like 4 miles nonstop and do it in X amount of time. I'm just like not giving myself any time limit.
Yeah,
just
I did like 6 miles a day. I did like 6 miles.
Wow! Oh yeah, I saw that.
So
you're posting your map, my run.
Yeah, I mean, just in case, like, you know, you wanted to see like what's possible.
Yeah, exactly. It does give me some motivation. I'm like, oh man, Michael's running.
I did like six. Let's just do six today, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to do six, but now I was like, this stupid that Map My Run thing is like the worst possible app for running.
It's terrible.
Because like, you know, when you do a circle, right? Like, yep. You hit that mile mark, like that's where the mile starts and stops. Like that's like, you know, you've hit the mile. But each time like I run, like the mile marker moves like like a block each time.
Yeah,
that
it's like the wrong direction.
And by the time like gone 5 miles, like to get to like to have it click over to 5 miles, I have to run another mile. You know, so I have to run like I was already at like, you know, 0.4 miles. Like, well, screw it, I'm just gonna run the extra mile now. You know, so it's just not stupid. Like,
maybe it's the free version of the app. They make you pay for it to get accurate location data.
Yeah, but you know, like, and it's not really that expensive, but still, like, I just like, you know, it's not that bad. I mean, because I know where it is, but like something about like, well, I can't post that online.
Yeah,
you know, it's
exactly.
But then, like, it's like, well, how much more accurate is it going to be, like, when you pay for it? You know, it's like if it's already doing this, it's already this off for the free version. I couldn't imagine like the $5.99 a month version being any more accurate than this, because it's still using all the same stuff. You know, it's not like it's like I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I never know these days. I don't know. It's hard to trust some of these bigger app companies because, like, on the free ones, they put advertisements on them, but then you hear about some of them just having totally different platforms on their free compared to their paid version.
I don't know.
So, I don't know, but I think the important thing is it shows you what you're doing.
Yeah.
It gives you some credibility.
I just want to brag. So.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason I have it so I can post it on, you know, I'll post it on my Facebook. That's really the only reason I have it, so I can say, look, you know, look what I did today. What did you do today? You know, I did.
Exactly.
I don't like it because like I was doing like I noticed my pace like it's pretty decent until like, you know, I paused for like this car was like coming out and I paused and it dropped like a whole minute off my time. It's like,
jeez.
I was like, wait a minute. I was doing like 10-minute mile, and now it's like 11:30.
Yeah.
Because of pause. And I know I was going the same pace. I know I didn't slow down that much. But I don't know. Screw it.
The tracking is going to make you see those little milliseconds, count those inches, and you can either just let it be a general credibility, or you can focus on the little micro point.
Yeah, about the little micro stuff. I just like to, it's more so like, you know, because you have that like accountability to yourself, and I think that's like one of the hardest things with people and fitness especially is accountability. And you know, like,
absolutely.
If you're tracking it, because it sends you this little run report at the end of the week, and it said this is how many miles you ran this week. And it's nice to kind of know, to see your progress, because when you're not tracking it, you're not keeping a log of what you're eating and what you're doing. It's really hard to track it. It's just this information that's just floating out in the atmosphere, and it's hard for you to like to make it real. So you want to make it as real as possible if you can. So journaling, jogging, apps, or whatever you want to use. But it's important to at least track it for a while, because then you kind of know, like, okay, I'm doing like at least, you know, it's at least a 10-minute mile, because I, you know, I look at the time and I look at this, and it's somewhat accurate as far as that. So then you can kind of leave it behind, like, if you don't want to do it anymore. But it also has, like, this thing has, like, these really cool little contests. So, like, it, you know, if you run, like, 30 miles a month or something, they enter you into, like, a raffle for something. So, I mean, you can do, so there's little things. That, so there's some cool things with it that you can do. It's all, you know, probably just scanning you for your email address and stuff. But
everything is.
But it's a little motivation to do something extra. And you might not win anything, but I think it's just nice to be in a contest sometimes, because it motivates you.
Oh, absolutely.
You
know? Nothing like some free prizes to get you off the couch.
Speaking of free prizes, I've been awarding the defriend and block button to a lot of people on Facebook these days.
Oh, I'm glad to hear.
Oh my God!
What's the newest development in that section? What's happening?
But today, well, like last night, my soul is saying, Michael, these are things we want you to do. And one of the things it wants me to do is to start doing more things bilingually. So it wants me to do to do sessions in Spanish and to do like a radio show episode in Spanish and to do things in Spanish because I have these skills and I just don't ever utilize them. So my soul is like, hello, we should be doing this stuff. So I just like posted this thing on my Facebook wall and I was announcing that, you know, in the next few weeks or so, I'm going to be adding some services that are going to be in Spanish. So, ta-da! And this one guy comes out, and I don't even know who this guy was. Like, I don't know how he made it on my friend list. But he was like, I speak English. And, you know, if people want to learn how to talk to me, they better learn how to speak English, you know? I'm just learning Spanish. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What?
A few of my friends already jumped in before like I saw the thing, and I was like, wait a minute. I said, first off, you're coming from a place of complete privilege to say the statement you're saying. It's also very offensive because my mother came here not speaking English to this country. And that's always been my hot button things when people say that kind of shit, because my mom, and she still struggles with the English language sometimes, and people will make fun of her. And that really hits home when people make these kind of statements. And it's racist. It's overtly racist to say what you're saying. They have to learn to speak our language. First off, you're on my wall, and I'm talking about doing bilingual episodes of radio shows, and you're saying that, you know, so why are you on my wall then?
What brought you here?
And then he tried to justify it. He quantified. He came back to my wall and tried to justify his racism. And whenever you got to justify it by trying to put someone else down, he said, and I don't believe his story at all. He said that one day he was approached by this Mexican guy who was speaking to him in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, told the Mexican guy, well, I don't Spanish. You know, can you talk to me in English? And the Mexican guy goes, well, why don't you speak Spanish? And he says, after that, I just started disliking all the Spanish-speaking people. I was like, oh, my God. That's the worst.
The worst reason.
Someone saying, it's like, you know, you forgot your homework. And the teacher's like, well, Joey, why did you forget your homework? And you come up with this big elaborate story to justify, like, why you didn't do your homework. It was the worst story. It basically said, and I won't change my mind. I said, well, therefore I have to block you. I said, we've gotten to the point now where you're not even open to discussion on this topic. You know, you're not even, we're not even in the same ball field anymore. So, delete.
See you later.
And my wall is not a free speech zone. I've always been very
this
clear.
Is your speech zone.
It really is. Like, if people start detracting away from their original intent, and this is, like, no matter what the – I mean, it could be, like, these random just stupid comments. I'll delete them because it's my wall.
Yeah.
And it is my privilege to delete things that don't fit the narrative or take away from a positive narrative or just I don't want to respond to. You know, it's like
– yeah.
You know, it's like I get these little notification alerts. I'm like, fuck. When I see certain names, I'm like, fuck.
Like, what this time? What happened?
Who's
getting offended?
And sometimes, like, I don't want to type it on my phone, so I get really pissed because, like,
yep.
My finger won't move fast enough on the keyboard. I'm like, fuck.
The phone is glitching. It's not making it.
Yeah. Now I got to pull out the laptop, and I got to do this whole thing now, and
so that goes into another thought, is like, how much are we letting the social media kind of rule our lives? If we're stopping what we're doing, getting our laptop out because our phone doesn't work fast enough so that we can respond to these people.
Yeah, it takes a lot.
at what point is that doing anything for us as individuals, and at what point is that just like perpetuating those kind of things happening, kind of like it's like enticing it to happen in the future almost,
right?
Just and by acknowledging it and moving forward with it in whatever way, whether it's deleting it or commenting on it.
I feel sometimes it's important, depending on the context of the conversation, I think.
Yep.
Because sometimes, you know, if it's something that is important, like if there's a conversation that's being had. But for me, there's trigger things that just really piss me off. Like when someone says something that's overtly racist, or someone posts something that is just so inflammatory to the topic, then I feel like I I'm getting to the point where I don't really want to respond. I just delete the comment.
Yeah, it is like
I just delete their comment because I'm not going to answer it, and I don't want wars to break out on my wall between my other friends and between my friends, because it's just unnecessary. And I don't want to have to, because I've come to the point where I, you know, and it's really interesting, the psychology of social media, because there are times when I question, should I post this? Because it's going to be incendiary if I post this, you know, and it goes back to like, it makes me question, you know, like what you said, how much of myself, do I want to invest in what this is going to bring when I post this on my wall?
Exactly.
So it makes me feel like I have to censor. You know, do I want to censor myself, or do I want to, you know, have this conversation if it comes up? And it really gets frustrating because it takes so much time to, and you realize you spend so much extra time like having these conversations that can go somewhere positive. Again, for instance, we had this really positive conversation. I posted something about Sandra Bland, which we can talk about a little bit later on the show. But one of my friends posted, it was actually something about the Black Lives Matter conference, and they were doing a rally, and I posted a video of the rally, and it was just really cool. And someone says, yeah, this is what we need, and, you know, but it really should just be All Lives Matter. You know, not just Black Lives Matter. And then, you know, I responded in kind and I said, well, you know, that's not appropriate because, you know, obviously right now Black lives really need our focus because our judicial system is focused on like these individuals in a very negative way. So Black Lives Matter is not saying that all lives don't matter. It's just saying that right now this is where our focus needs to be, you know. And it ended up being a very positive conversation because she, like, you know, didn't understand where her comment had come from, you know, because, you know, we assume like we're saying something positive, but if we don't notice racism and distancing and those things within ourselves, we just naturally will respond like that.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a really positive conversation. She came away from it receptive, and she was open. And I was like, man, this is how comment threads are supposed to work, where we're having a dialogue talking, and like we can come away with either, you know, a little bit firmer in our position, or we change our minds and are receptive to someone else's ideas, you know?
Yeah, and that's what you hope for, but I don't know. It's far and few in between that does actually end up happening.
No, never happens that way.
Yeah.
I saw, of all my conversations, it's like four posts and that was like it, you know, we were done.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. It was like this beautiful, beautiful thing. It was like a beautiful flower, rare flower that, you know, I wanted to like screenshot it and take and like put it on my wall, like you know, reminisce on this moment.
Picture of it, put it up
on
your altar.
You know, and it's really funny. So I have this like really trashy confession to make. I don't know if you follow YouTubers, right? But anyway,
some of them.
Anyway, I've been watching these two because they were like together for a while, and then they had this like really crazy breakup. So I was like, I got, like, my popcorn out. I've been watching their Twitter breakup and, like, 'cause they're, like, really big YouTubers. you know, and they're both gay, and they were like living together, and now they're not living together. But the thing I've noticed is, and I was watching it more because of what I found interesting in the psychology of it, is vlogging. Like, you know, first off, like, I think it's great that, you know, you can vlog and like make millions vlogging if you do that, and all these like really young, hip, you know, next gen people are doing that, you know, like call it Connor Franta and, you know, Joey Graceffa and all these people who now have books and stuff out. And I think it's great that they can do that. But the thing that I'm noticing is, like, with vlogging, especially with this couple and watching their breakup, is how public they're making the, it's like they can't have intimacy without the cameras there.
And that's interesting.
It's really, if you ever watch like vlogs, it's like really interesting. Like, people just record their day. And what my soul told me is, isn't it interesting how we're being conditioned to think it's really cool to have our lives recorded?
Truman Show.
Right. And we're all in like watching their followers. It's just crazy because there are people who are supremely obsessed with these YouTubers. And
yeah,
to the point where it's just nuts. It's nuts. Like, I don't know. I mean, they're YouTubers. They're not like, you know, they're not like movie stars.
They're not like acting and things. They're just recording their lives.
They're just like recording dumb shit, you know, basically, you know. And it really is. Like, a lot of stuff they do is just like, they're just talking randomly about stupid stuff. And then they get like 6 million views, and, you know, they're making a few pennies off each view. So they're making lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was watching like today, like the guy, you know, Matthew Lush is his name. And he's like, he posted this video of how his ex wanted to get back with him. And you could tell it was a conversation that he shouldn't have brought to the camera. You know, because he started to bash his ex in this video.
And what
I found interesting was, like, his followers were all going to his ex's Twitter page and, like, posting nasty things. So it's, like, enabling this bullying. And I was watching this whole thing, and I was like, man, is this what our life – because we do that on Facebook when people break up and stuff. It becomes a Facebook affair. People pick sides and make comments. And it's, you know, it's really interesting to see how the dynamics of communication, but also the how intimacy is changing. How could you have a healthy relationship when you're always having it filmed for your viewers and your followers on YouTube? Like, how could that ever be healthy? And is that in a direction that we're all kind of like moving in with, like, Snapchat and like these things? Or are we conditioning ourselves to be viewed, you know, 24/7?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Like, I think people always bring it back up, but like the whole Google Glass project, I think right there is just showing you how much we're being conditioned to it.
Right.
Like, everything is being documented at all times, and whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing is yet to be seen, and it's probably not going to be either. It's probably going to be somewhere in between. There's going to be its benefits, like, that far outweigh the negatives, but then there's also going to be negative sides, which are going to make you have to think if it's going to be something that's worthwhile for your life.
Right.
And I think that, I don't know, in a world where we're all connected and we all have the possibility, like, all of us have pretty much, if we have access to a high-speed internet connection and a video camera, we're all in the same boat as any of those YouTubers. We just have to figure out whatever formula is gonna get people interested in our lives, and it's as simple as that, and people start watching and share it, and once you hit a certain point, it's kind of no return from there. You get a certain amount of followers, a certain amount of people interested in you, and it'll just kind of perpetuate on its own.
Mm.
But whether or not that's a good thing, whether that's a bad thing, I don't know. I mean, I think that we can all use it for different things. Like, there's pretty much only one blogger that I follow, and that's Casey Neistat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out of New York. He's a filmmaker, and he just created a, like, competitor to Snapchat. called Beame or Beam, B-E-M-E. And the idea is to make a more engaging Snapchat. So, like, you interact with your friends more and you don't actually look at your screen. When you're recording, you hold it up to your, like, you hold the phone up to your chest and just record what's going on around you. And then it's, I don't know, there's a few other things. It's still in the beta testing, but it's trying to get people more involved with each other using that same kind of Snapchat, life sharing, Periscope style technology. And so
right.
That's where I'm saying there's people that are taking these technologies and these ideas and putting them in good directions. And then there's people that are taking them and exploiting them in other ways. But it's just a matter of finding that balance and finding those people who you resonate with.
Mm.
And I might say exploiting, but that's just my personal opinion. Other people could see it as entertainment that they want to have in their life. And who am I to tell them that that's not right or not the way to do it? Like,
right.
We're all still figuring this technology thing out. We don't, like, even the experts don't have the answers to it at this point. So we're all in the same boat just trying to figure it all out.
It's interesting. It really is interesting. And I was watching this there, you know, I've been watching it for the past, like, few months, you know, this whole, like, debacle, because it's just so fascinating to me. Because when you're in that public eye, it does change how, because, you know, we're only privy to what they're showing us. There's a story that happens off camera.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And it really becomes like reality TV. You're only getting the snippets, and the snippets are shifted towards getting you to see a perspective that typically the creator wants you to see. So you're not really getting the entire picture. So, but I like reading, like, what the fans say, because it's just so, it's almost scary how obsessed people get with, like, these YouTube personalities and the links to, like, even now they have, like, these things like VidCon and Playlist Live where you can go meet your favorite YouTuber. Yeah, so they have, like, these big events, and you can go meet your favorite YouTubers, and they have, like, sessions on content creation and how to use, you know, YouTube as a platform to further your message and all this other stuff. So there, I mean, I think it's great because anyone can do it now, and I think that's a beautiful thing that, you know, some of these kids like Tyler Oakley, who is, I remember watching him when he was, like, years ago when I was at PETA, like, he just started making videos, and now he's, like, all over TV, and he's got, like, books, and, like, and it's great because these young kids, like, had the initiative to do something with this technology, and they do have an impact. And, like, he's done stuff with, like, the Trevor Project and, you know, talks about bullying and you know, so it's they're using their platform as a message center as well. But, you know,
definitely.
You also do see it, like, you know, they're still promoting pop culture and, you know, so it's you know, you really haven't seen anything – you know, breakthrough that is, you know, changing consciousness in that way. Like, things go viral. Like, the stupider it is, the more viral it goes, you know? It's like, you don't really see consciousness shifting things going viral that way, you know? You see stupid cat videos or prank videos.
The prank videos.
Oh my gosh, I can't stand the pranks and the challenge videos. They really just annoy me.
They're not
to no
even
end.
Pranks. There's so many of them aren't pranks. They're just people
doing stupid stuff
to start trouble with people.
Yeah, like the ones where people are trying to start fights with each other. It's,
yeah, but then I don't even know how real half that stuff is. Like, my skeptic side is like, this is all staged. It's all fake. It's TV show stuff. But
yeah, well, people will do anything. But I think some of it is real because people will do anything. It's like recently I saw this video where the guy jumped off a bridge in London and was like caught in the currents. And he did it for views because his viewers wanted him to do this stupid thing. And he did it. He said he'll never do that again. He'll never, you know, do something like that again. But it's almost like it becomes an addiction, I think. Like, I'm watching this Matthew Lush guy. And I knew him from when I was back at PETA. Like, because he and I were supposed to do some stuff together when I was at PETA. So I've watched him over the years, and he's become like a very big YouTube celebrity. He's like got millions of followers, and but I've watched over the years, and it seems like when you start to live in that space where you're being filmed constantly, it becomes an addiction, I think. And I think you can't separate yourself, like Facebook, for instance, like for a lot of us, becomes an addiction because you can't separate your life from this online space. Like you have to like share, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, exactly. You feel like it's almost like you're obligated to share elements of your life, and you know, it's like, well, shit, I didn't share anything today. Does that mean that I didn't do anything wonderful today?
No, you just didn't exist today.
Yeah, you didn't exist today. But I remember, like, I would post these little things. Oh, I'm going to do a digital detox. I'm disappearing for a week. And, you know, no one really noticed. You know, and now I'm just doing them. I'm not telling people, announcing, I'm doing a digital detox. I'll be gone for a while. I'm just going to disappear for a while. You know,
yeah.
And you know, it's just... I'm finding that I need to get away from social media because I'm finding, you know, it's so heavy, especially right now with all the stuff that's going on in the world with all the racial tensions and,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jade Helm and, you know,
yep.
all these like crazy things going on in the world. And it's like, I'm absorbing way too much. And I'm getting involved in all these like really heavy conversations, and I'm like, shit, like I'm not doing enough self-care around this.
Yeah,
and
I'm finding that too.
And it's like, I want to have these conversations with people, but at some point I also have to say, I need to take care of myself because
yeah.
I can't be a healthy advocate if I'm not healthy.
Exactly.
Know, basically.
And so
yeah,
you have to find that balance and not spreading yourself too thin. And
yeah.
information too, like just trying to get all the information does far less than just trying to get some information and actually doing something with it.
Right. Right. And it's, but it's like, so it's so sickening though. I mean, and this is where social media, I think, is a very powerful tool. It's so sickening though, to see how, you know, divided we all are. But it's great
mm-hmm.
that we're getting so much information so quickly, and we're able to dialogue. Like, they just released a video claiming to show her in the detention center.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And, like, prior to taking her photo. But there are inconsistencies in the video. First of all, the video isn't time-stamped. And in the video, the woman who they say is her, you know, Sandra Bland, doesn't have a undershirt on, whereas in her video, she has an undershirt on,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's like you're letting the police department investigate themselves. And do you think they're going to come out with, like, just like if you committed a crime and we're like, okay, Taylor, investigate it and let us know, like, if you did commit the crime and then if, like, you'd be punished for it.
Yeah,
like,
and that's what has me so troubled about all these, like, brutality things is, like, who polices the police?
Right.
It doesn't seem to be working too well.
It's like we were moving closer to martial law.
Closer. Feels like we're pretty much there in a lot of spots.
Yeah, but it's almost like, you know, it's like you're weighing the balance. Would it be better if the federal government took over the police? Like, you know, it's sickening. And I read this really interesting report about that this lawyer had done a step-by-step analysis of the video, and
mm-hmm.
And really talked about how her rights were violated at every step of the stop, you know, that he did. Like, for a blinker, like, not signaling? Come on.
Yeah.
You know? And then, like, she asked, you know, why is she being placed under arrest 14 times.
Wow.
And was never answered. And you could tell in the video she wasn't resisting arrest, And he immediately starts saying, why are you resisting arrest? Why are you trying to grab my gun? You know?
Like, just it's, saying things, just putting it out there, trying to protect himself.
Right. It's you can obviously see in the video that was not the case. And it's just like, it gets to the point where it's so heavy in your heart because it's like nonstop. Like, we're not mm-hmm. fixing the problem. It's like, what is it going to take for us to fix this?
I don't see any solutions.
You know, it's. I'm seeing a lot of anger and a lot of upset and a lot of, you know, name calling and finger pointing. But it's. What is it going to take for us to have solutions put into action?
That's what I see about so many things right now, like across the board, whether it's the Black Lives Matter, whether it's food, whether it's food waste, whether it's veganism, wars, whatever it is, like there's all these issues that so many people are upset about, but how do we make that next step to actually changing something? And I know we've talked about this before, but just like, what can we do as individuals to affect larger groups of people around us into making these systematic changes that need to happen? Because everyone keeps wanting to say, oh, there's someone else more qualified, or, oh, there's someone else that's working on this that's going to take care of this. But, yeah, there might be a couple people, but that doesn't excuse us as individuals from stepping out to the sidelines and thinking that someone else is doing it, because there's not enough people doing it. We're not seeing these changes. If there are enough people doing it, we'd see these changes.
Right.
Because we can see how fast word spreads when something outrageous happens. Think about how fast word will spread if something actually changes. We're not getting
right.
any of that because it's not happening. Because we're just right. trying to put it off so that we don't have to take individual responsibility for it. Whether we're doing that purposely or we're just doing that because we've got other things going on and we want to say that we don't have time or that's not our battle to fight, which a lot of these issues aren't. But I think
right.
we all have to start figuring out what those things are that are important to us that we can actually have a say in.
Well, I think it goes even beyond the things that are most important to us. I think it's the things that are most difficult for us to look at, like racism
yeah.
and white supremacy and privilege, I think are really important for us to look at because it's systemic and it really feeds into a lot of the other stuff. You know, we talk about privilege and systems of racism and
mm-hmm.
addressing those things within ourselves when we're noticing them. It's really funny because I had this moment the other day, this moment where I woke up to my own privilege. It was really interesting because I was,
yeah.
you know, I was on these little apps and it was asking for like my nationality or whatever it asked for, your race, right? And
yeah.
You know, I'm Hispanic, so, but I remember, and I had this moment where I was looking through, and I was like, I always check white, you know, and I remember way back to when I was in, and this memory just came back up, to when I was in elementary school, and someone said, oh, don't check, like, Hispanic, check white, because if you check Hispanic, they place you in a certain category. I was like, oh.
Okay.
Because I, you know, even though I am Hispanic, I pass as white because my skin color gives me that privilege to
yeah.
make the choice to not be Hispanic. And I don't have an accent, so I can choose to not be Hispanic. I can choose to engage my privilege in a way that, you know, someone else who was dark skinned couldn't. And it was
yeah.
really interesting to confront my own privilege that way. I was like, wow, holy crap. I have a privilege that others don't have. And, you know, it was interesting because when we can affirm those things within ourselves, we can start recognizing them in other avenues. But I think changing those things, like, you know, noticing how we react when we see a group of black men on the street, like noticing the sensations that come up in our bodies, you know, do we go into immediate judgment? You know, do we go into justification? Would we have the same reaction if it was a group of white men on the street? You know? And really asking ourselves honestly those questions, because it's okay to ask those questions. We have to ask those questions if we're gonna, if we really are intent on dismantling these systems of racism. We have to ask.
You can't ignore anything.
No, and it's not bad to say, look, I have these things within me that are, you know, echoes of a system that I've been part of for a very long time. That's the only way we can change it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you start doing yoga, your hamstrings are like terrible. You know, you can't really do all the stretches. But the more you engage the stretch, the more flexible you become. You know, it's
the
like
more change you can, the more change
yeah.
you can then piggyback on top of that, the more
right.
you're able to work harder at your end goal.
Right. Right. It's the immediate jump. People say, well, all lives matter. Well, yeah, they do. Of course all lives matter. You know,
but that's
no one's saying
the discussion
that.
Right now.
And it's just funny how we subtly will distance ourselves from the idea that black lives do matter.
Yeah.
And they do matter. You know, it's...
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's... You know, and white lives matter and Chinese lives matter. Everyone's lives matter. But when we're talking about, like... what we're seeing as far as the system we're trying to dismantle right now, this is where our focus like has to be, because you know it's obvious this is a big thing that needs our attention nationally, but it also is tied into police brutality. It's tied into all these other things, you know,
tied into the drug war. It's tied into the war. Unconsciousness
yeah.
tied on to the pharmaceutical companies. Like, it's all connected when you go back into it. So they're all just one little spoke in the wheel.
Yeah, like, and we talk about, like, SISTA, the you know, prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just it requires us to have these discussions that are difficult. Not with just with other people, with ourselves. And I do think, you know, we all, especially with social media, have to remember, though, that we have to be kind to ourselves, and we have to give ourselves, even in this struggle, the room to have some joy in our lives, because the struggle is still going to be there. But
mm-hmm.
to be healthy advocates, we have to be healthy. And we are not honoring what's happening in the world if we don't take care of ourselves in the process. You know, we can't advocate from, you know, our deathbeds as effectively
yeah.
as we can when we are healthy and whole within our bodies. And that's how we honor those that have been murdered by the system. That's how we honor the process that's opening up. We honor it by being healthy so we can engage it. And we can't forget that. Because it does get heavy.
Absolutely.
It's okay to take a day off of Facebook. You
yeah.
know, it's okay.
It's encouraged, please.
And
prescribe
we have to be careful.
It. Plan
like,
it.
I, you know, I notice on Facebook, too, people do baiting, where they try to bait you into these discussions and arguments, knowing they're not going to change their minds, but they purposely will bait you into,
yeah.
you know,
I mean,
into
people,
vitriol.
People want to have those battles. Sometimes you're just in that mood. You just want to have a conflict to feel alive.
Right. You know, we have to educate ourselves too. I bought this book a while back and I read some of it, but I'm going back and rereading it now, and it's called The New Jim Crow, Mass
okay.
Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty powerful book. It's a really important book, I think, to read. One of my spirit teachers was doing a discussion on this book on online, but
mm-hmm.
you know, it really brings to light the prison industrial complex, but it also talks about how the system is like just the new slavery. You know,
it's just marketed differently, packaged, repackaged.
Yeah,
but
it's
still the same ideas.
Yeah. You know, and it really is a system that's set up to make certain people profitable. Prison systems are now privatized. So
yep.
they're business.
So many of them.
And businesses are only intent on making money. And they're making money off of every prisoner that's in there. So we have these laws that target, you know, specific groups, black and brown people, you know, mm-hmm. specifically. And
drug users.
Drug users. And the stiff laws for, you know, marijuana. And, you know, the thing that gets me, too, that really frustrates me. Michelle Alexander, the woman who wrote this book, said in a quote on Facebook one time that was really great, you know, it's, we have all these black and brown youth that are in prison for selling marijuana, but now we have all these white men in their suits in Colorado and these other states selling marijuana yep. openly. You know,
very
so,
hypocritical, I guess, would be a...
It's very privileged. It demonstrates what privilege is. It's like that's, you know, you have, and oftentimes a lot of these people who are selling drugs are doing so because they can't get jobs anywhere else because they may have felonies in their records. They may have, you know, they may be in situations where this is the avenue that they have available to them right now to make money.
Yeah,
you know, we don't know
exactly.
everybody's circumstances. Of course,
that's
just like with everything, there are those who will take advantage of systems because that's just human nature to do that. But mm-hmm. the very fact that here these, you know, people of privilege can come in and do the very same thing and make millions of dollars doing it and not go to jail, you know, it just says, look, you know, it just fries me on the inside.
It just shows you how it's structured, how it works. It lets
yeah,
you
really
see
does.
See through the loopholes.
Yeah, it really, you know, it shines a light on a very important, you know, important topic, you know, privilege
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, the systems of privilege are set up to benefit, you know, certain people and to keep other people from ever moving beyond the caste system we've put them in.
Yeah, keeps them in the streets, keeps them in the neighborhoods away from the rest of society, and then there's no way to go up from there. And I don't think that, I don't know, I don't feel like there's a group of people that are just kind of diabolically like twiddling their fingers being like, well, haha, we're going to keep these people in their rightful place. I just feel like the way that things are set up, like you're saying, making money off the prison industrial complex, making money off of all these systems that are already in place that are just perpetuating this is the real issue.
But the thing is, someone did that. You know, the slave traders were twiddling their thumbs and saying, this is going to make us a lot of money. So
yeah.
the system was already set up before, and we're still feeding into that system because we've never
absolutely.
Dismantled the system. So
yep.
there are a select few who are still running this show. You know, and it's funny, when I used to work for PETA even, we would go and do protests at KFCs because, you know, KFC tortures and slaughters animals and does all kind of horrible things. But most of the places we would go would be in predominantly African-American communities. And I had this really great conversation with this guy once. He walked up and said, well, you know, how can you, you know, why are you protesting here? Why are you doing this? And I said, you know, if you ever think about it, right, like why are so many of these places that don't serve healthy, nutritious foods in predominantly black communities? And why does the black community have, you know, higher incidence of heart disease, stroke, cancer, you know, diseases that are caused by foods with high incidence of, you know, saturated fats and those kinds of things? You know, they target these communities because they know that, and it's cheap food.
Yep,
you know,
I think that's
and,
a big part.
And they're not promoting health, and they target very specific communities. And it's, you know, I've never done a protest at a KFC in a white community.
Wow, really?
It's just how it was. It's how these businesses set up because they want to make money off of what they consider disenfranchised communities.
Yeah.
You know, it's why, like, you know, you see liquor stores You see like these corner markets that only sell high fructose foods. They don't sell nutritious foods. Why doesn't Whole Foods go into areas that aren't gentrified? You know? It's like set up to keep people from having access to foods that they need. It's just mind blowing how this system is set up on privilege. You know?
Then it gets difficult trying to figure out how to make those changes, because even if we were to get the money together to put a Whole Foods into some of these neighborhoods, there's no way that they would be able to keep their same business plan selling things at the same cost they're selling in other places.
Well, they just wouldn't go. So there would be no plan. I mean, there would be no way to get them in there. They just wouldn't go there because, you know, to shop at Whole Foods requires you to have a certain amount of privilege to go in there and be able to spend the type of money you'd have to spend to buy the foods there.
Yeah.
You know, and even there, it's set up. There's a system of privilege that's set up there because, you know, you can't afford a month's worth of food unless you're like a really smart shopper. It's hard to afford a month's worth of food for a family of four at Whole Foods.
Yeah, I can't even imagine trying to do that.
And you know, and it's all the whole system is set up. You know, everything from marketing, everything from, you know, how we price our foods, everything from, you know, the people who are producing the foods. It's all like this whole system is set up to not be sustainable, but also to keep certain checks and balances on how we are able to move forward as a community. You know, it keeps us all divided. And it's very purposeful. If you really start to look at it, how these systems are set up, it's purposely set up to keep division. And it's sickening. You know, it's really sickening because, you know, we preach all this unity stuff, but rarely are we going to get to unity until we can address these systems within ourselves first, but then start to look at these systems that we're feeding into and then work to dismantle those systems in whatever way we can. No, it can just be having conversations like we're having here, you know?
Yeah.
And of course I don't have all the answers and I'm still learning, you know,
absolutely. We all are. You know, everyone is. It doesn't matter who you are and what position you're in. You're still learning.
I mean, just think about now the word transgender is mainstream. And I remember going to like a conference a couple of years back, maybe about 7 years ago, and you know it was a LGBT rally, Equality Virginia was holding this big rally, and we're going to talk about all these issues and stuff. And the person speaking really was trying to articulate something about this transgender community, but he wasn't doing it well. And this beautiful trans woman stood up in the audience and said, "You know, if you don't understand the T, it's okay not to talk about it." And in that moment, I realized I didn't understand the T. You know, I consider myself part of the LGBT community, but I didn't know anything about trans rights. I didn't know anything about members of the trans community and what they have to go through on a daily basis because they're excluded. You know, when they passed the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal, it was done on the basis that we were not going to include the transgender issue with that, because it would complicate and muddy the waters. Now there are discussions, and I think the Pentagon is talking about making it more inclusive so that trans individuals can also sign up and be in the military. That it would.
Okay.
So it's because, but you know, it's because trans has become a very, it's become, you know, I hate using the pop word, but pop term. It's become a pop term, and it's something trending. It's a trending term. Just like, you know, racism has always been here. It's been here for, you know, very, very long time. But now it's in our face, and it's bringing us to the point where we have to have these conversations. Conversations we should have had a long time ago. You know, it's unfortunate we have to have these conversations, but we're coming face to face with it now. You know, thanks to social media, and thanks to conversations, and thanks to, you know, activism, and thanks to people organizing. Like we're getting hit with so many things now that, you know, it's hard to keep up sometimes. Like, what, you know,
it's terribly hard to keep up all the time. But, I can never keep up.
But even if we're just barely keeping up, I think we're doing more than not even taking a look at these topics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really interesting because I remember posting memes and things, and I never really thought about. I never really put these memes, like, in the way back when. These memes through filters or checks, is this racist? Is this propagating a racist idea, or is this propagating language that is sexist? And it's not like neutralizing humor, but it's looking at, is this something that is going to be offensive in a way that is harming to somebody?
So, I don't know. That's when you start getting into humor and comedy with that, that's where I'm currently having trouble finding that line.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know, there's so many things that a lot of people are just like laughing, like, oh, that's really messed up. I can't believe you said that. That's funny. But you're laughing about it, you're acknowledging it, you're talking about it, and you understand that what they're saying is a satirical approach to what's going on. But yet there's a large group of people that could very easily take offense to that. Do you start censoring yourself and start not saying things because you're trying not to offend a certain subgroup, a certain group of people, but still trying to speak honestly about what you're seeing and what you're experiencing
right. In
the world?
But, you
and
know,
I think especially
that,
in comedy, that's hard.
It really is hard, and I think I look at the context that it's in, and this is why I run through my checks and filters. And I look at it, and then if I do post it and someone does find it offensive, I'll be willing to open to a dialogue with that person on why they find it offensive.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, you're always going to offend somebody. No,
yeah.
It's like I posted that thing about being bilingual and someone got offended. Yeah. You know, so like, you don't know what's going to offend somebody. And right now we are, it's not saying that we're overly sensitive to things now, but I think because our wounds right now and our grief is so raw because of all the stuff that's been happening recently, that we will take greater offense to things because those wounds are more sensitive now.
Definitely.
And I think we have to, especially those of us who are walking a spiritual path, have to be more conscious about what we consider funny and consider comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, is it really comedy? And is it humor that is trying to lessen the burden of grief, or is it humor that's taking advantage of our grief just to be funny? You know, and I think it's really causing us to really take a look at what, you know, we consider appropriate or inappropriate. You know, and there's stuff now that I won't post because I consider it completely inappropriate. You know, especially because I know people, like, especially people who are grieving in communities in my Facebook group, there's something I just won't post because I don't feel it's appropriate right now.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, I understand context is definitely a very important part of it. But if we start looking at things and start self-censoring everything that we're doing, do you think that that leaves an opportunity for some things just to get brought into light? Because I don't know, even if something comes across as offensive, it's almost like if they hadn't have said that, there's a whole conversation there that never would have happened for a whole group of people. Like, it's almost like that offensive conversation is an important catalyst for alternate change that needs to go on.
Well, that's like part of the filtering process, right? You can look at that as but I think too, if I'm posting something like that and I feel it could be a conversation opener, let me add that context. That's why that whole status block, write a comment block, is there. Let me provide context on why I'm posting this. You know, and it's not censoring. It's just saying, let me provide some context on why I feel this is an appropriate thing to post. And it's not saying that you have to do that with everything you do. You know, and especially, I think, too, it depends on who you are as an individual.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
If people know, like, you're not a jackass and you're not, like, some overt racist who has, like, you know, the Confederate flag as the background in your profile picture, you know, I think people, you know, we know our friends, and we know if they're coming from a place of humor or if they're coming from a place of, you know, vitriol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I do think that, especially now, especially because these issues, you know, it's hard to say, you know, if you're going to post on your wall, all, you know, Black Lives Matter, and then you're going to post something that may appear funny to meme, but is also derogatory to the African-American community.
Yeah.
It propagates stereotypes, or it's, shaming the community in some way. You know, it's how do you counterbalance that then? You know, you can't really say all Black Lives Matter, you know, all Black Lives Matter, and then over here post something that shows like you're not really that serious about Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like you said, like the medium that you're producing this on. So I guess where I'm concerned about seeing people getting overly offended is with like established stand-up comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Like these people that have a platform to talk and people know that they're comedians, like their whole life is around making jokes and looking at the world around them and finding the funny aspects of it. Like, I mean, just look at John Oliver. Like, he's a comedian, but yet most of the stuff on the show is pretty heavy content, but yet almost everything that he talks about, there's a huge laughing response from the audience, and he says it in a funny way. And
well, I mean, look at Lisa Lampanelli.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
not familiar with her.
She's an insult comic, so she actually makes fun specifically of racial stereotypes, you know, homosexual stereotypes. So she mm-hmm. makes fun of those. Because part of what, you know, her act I've heard her do in an interview say, you know, she brings these very difficult words, these very difficult ideas into a place where we can laugh at them. Because by laughing at them, we depower them. And when you can laugh at, is it like versus like that guy who was on Seinfeld who used the N-word, you know, it's like there's...
Yep.
You know, she's using these stereotypes. So she never uses that word. I don't know if she uses that word or not, but she's using these stereotypes to depower them by making us laugh at them. You know, and I think you can tell though. You can tell when a comic is doing it because they want to open up consciousness
dialogue
in some way, or if because I mean I oppose like stuff that makes fun of homosexual stereotypes because I think they're funny, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, and it's like, you know, and I, as a member of that community, I don't take offense, you know, because
mm-hmm.
some shit is just funny, you know? And I think we can laugh at ourselves a bit. And I think we all do that within our communities. You know, and I think that's what comedy is supposed to do, is to bring down those walls so we can laugh at ourselves. And have some humor around our stereotypes and have humor around. But you can tell like when someone's using stereotypes, not as a method of lightening us around them, but using them to attack, you know, and I think, you know, you can kind of see that in how the comic is, you know, off the stage, you know,
is this
a persona and what are they trying to accomplish through their show? Or are they doing this just to try to make themselves, you know, go viral? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Are they trying to create, are they trying to be relevant in a positive way? They're trying to be relevant in a way, because negativity now, you say something like that, you know, and all of a sudden you're all over the internet. Good, bad, or ugly, You know, it's what happens. Like Obama used the N-word recently. Look how, like, oh my God, the whole world, like, stopped for a minute. You know, but he,
oh,
in the context,
yeah. Remember all that.
You know, in the context he was using it, it was appropriate. You know, but, you know, it's interesting. Like, I just don't, it's hard. It's hard now. We're walking on eggshells,
yep.
You know, which is why I try to bring up these very important social justice issues on my Facebook page. But also I try to, like, to go back to create positive space for us just to all just breathe a bit, you know, because we need those landing zones to just breathe.
Yep.
You know, and I'm finding myself really picking and choosing what I'm posting. Like earlier, I saw this one person, they got really upset, or they posted something that I felt was slightly offensive. And it was, they posted a meme, and it was of a comic who said that Sandra Bland's probably shaking her head, you know, seeing how many people are posting about a lion that was killed in Zimbabwe or something. It was something like a meme.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
You know, and I could see people going both ways with that. It is insensitive in the timing of using her name in that context, I think. But, you know, this person is really upset. People were talking about this lion that was killed when they're talking about police brutality and Sandra Bland. And I can see both sides, because as an animal rights activist, you know, both of those are very important to me. It doesn't make any one less than the other if I decide that I need to talk about the lion that was murdered. You know, they're both very important issues. And, you know, this person was like just really angry and ranting about how people, you know, if all the people who talked about the lion talked about what happened with Sandra Bland and police brutality, then, you know, the world would change. And I agree on some level, but also it's like, you know, we talked about before, people have their issues they talk about. And you really can't, you don't get the context of someone's life. Like, just because I'm an animal rights activist doesn't mean I'm not a gay rights activist. I just may not be a gay rights activist on Facebook.
You know? Or right now. Or, like,
or right
at
now.
The second in this conversation.
Right. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I think we're in very touchy grounds these days. And I think summertime is already like that anyways because it's hot.
Yeah. So the summer things always get heated. Heated.
We're heated. We're also in this very crazy astrological time where shit's going down and we don't know where to put the energy of the anger and we haven't been, you know, the big thing is, I think we haven't been given an opportunity to grieve any of the stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone goes through the five stages of grief. And as a collective community, we haven't been able to grieve any of the stuff that's been happening. You know, we haven't had a chance to mourn it's like, we don't need to hear about Charleston anymore.
No.
You know?
Not at all.
Not at all.
I mean,
you know,
what's CNN talking about today? I don't even know. Yeah, it's all about the lions.
It's like the flag's down now, and like we stopped talking about the flag. The flag's like moot point now. And it's God, it's just like, you know, it's these things are important only for a blip, you know, and then they shift our attention to something else, and it's just getting to be, it's overwhelming at times. You
it's
know, it really
very overwhelming. And that's why I think what we were talking about earlier, taking this break from it, because I think that we get caught up in seeing all these things happening, good, bad, ugly, pretty, it doesn't matter. We're just getting exposed to so much information. Excuse me. Our bodies and our minds don't know how to react to it. Like, we just we don't know how to handle this. This is something that we've never had to experience before. I don't care how much of an expert you are. There's no definitive research on what 80 years of Facebook conversations and Redditing is going to do to someone's due to someone. Like,
right, right.
We just have no idea what the long-term effects of this stuff are. So
and we
like,
really, you know, we haven't, everything gets politicized immediately. Like the, yeah. the shooting in Charleston, we didn't get a chance to just mourn the fact that 9 lives were lost and that this killer, you know, was going to lose his life and his family was losing their son. And, you know, it's none of us got to mourn any of the stuff that happened, you know, mm-hmm. It immediately became a Second Amendment issue, gun rights issue. So then we directed our anger, which comes from our grief, into gun rights, and then we directed it to flag. And, you know, there are 4 other stages of grief that we flow through, you know, but we're not getting to do that collectively as a nation or as communities. So this is why things are so touchy, because we all are looking for a way to grieve what's happening because of the interconnectedness of just the way life is, but we're not getting the chance to just grieve and say, fuck, everything sucks right now. And it's okay for it to suck. It's okay to be in the awareness that it sucks. Everything doesn't have to be a political issue. Sometimes things can just suck. And sometimes we need the space to like cry or to get angry or whatever at what's happening in the world. But we need to have that space to do it. And we get caught up in all this Facebook distraction stuff. It's really hard to do that. You know, it's hard to have that positive space to grieve in whatever way we need to grieve.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just about finding that balance. I mean, it comes back to the balancing act of it all.
Right.
And just like you were saying earlier, you can't help anyone else with these bigger picture things if we're not helping ourselves. So it's like through helping others, we also have to find a way to set time aside for us as individuals.
Yeah, we have to do things that let us be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do things that let us, you know, feel.
Yeah, I think that's easy to not feel. So like, we click through so many pictures and videos and stuff on the internet with there being so many police beating videos and fight videos and pictures of gore and all these things that are in the past would have traumatized people like for a little while are just like things that we scroll over by the dozen every day.
Right.
Like I know I'm guilty of that by far. Like I'm not shocked. Like I'm not like, it takes a lot for me to see something nowadays and be like really bothered by it,
mm-hmm.
which is a terrifying thing to recognize.
Well, I think it's important for us, you know, to take a step back, not because we're not invested in making change, but I remember, like, as an activist, as a professional activist, the burnout you get if you don't give yourself the room to just inhale and exhale a bit, to do some yoga, to stretch, you're not just your body, but your mind in a way that lets you feel what needs to be felt away from social media. So we're not living through social media, but we're actually getting off and getting into life where change actually happens.
Exactly.
Because it's great to talk about these things on social media and you change and you affect a certain group of people that are in your circle of friends and then whoever may come off of that, you know, however the algorithms work. But when you're actually in your life and in your world and you're looking at yourself through your journal or you're going for a walk and you're noticing the world, that's where change gets to take place as well. And we all have to remember that we're going to die. Everyone's going to die, you know? And yes, make your life matter by helping to change this world for the very best that we can. But you also have to remember you have to live.
Yeah, you have to enjoy it yourself.
And we have to do things that let us be healthy so that we can create healthy communities so that change can happen. You know, so don't get caught up in the dramas that other people are just like, oh my God, like that guy on my Facebook, like I just had to delete him. I mean, it's okay, like, to delete people.
And then just think about this. Like, how many times has that come up in this conversation? This person has had such an impact on your life now. Like, what seemingly was such a little thing that just frustrated you at the time has now now turned into 15 minutes of your day for you talking about him, giving him that airtime.
But you know what's beautiful? It's like tomorrow, like, I don't even remember him.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And then you can have the next person that comes along.
Oh, my gosh. It's like,
what are they going to be? Is it going to be, like, racist flag running? Is it going
like
to be
the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses? It's like, I mean, I swear, like,
your door.
It's like, fuck, it's that person again. And then, like, some people, I'll see that notification, I'm like, oh, man, why? And then I'll check, and I'm like, okay, they didn't post anything bad. You know,
it's like,
and it's not that I don't want people posting on my Facebook, but there are just certain people out there that just, they post these rants and raves and, you know, their likes and dislikes, and they post stuff that has not even relevant to what my post was about. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just shake my head. I just like, I'm not even going to check. I'm not even going to look at what they posted because it's just, I mean, it's just, I just can't.
What does it do for you?
I can't. But I'm finding, though, that I'm moving towards creating safe space on my wall so that we can have just moments of breathing and moments of just reflecting on the things that enliven us, because we need that right now. We need to feel like we're alive, because so much is taking our energy that we just need room to breathe. You know,
just need to be reminded.
Yeah, to remind ourselves that life is beautiful. Yeah, life is all the other stuff. Life is murder. Life is death. Life is, you know, crime. Life is police brutality. Life is racism. Life is gender inequality. Yeah, life is all of that stuff. But life is also beautiful. God, it's like so beautiful. You know, and it's looking outside at that sunset and that sunrise, getting off your computer for a bit and just enjoying the fucking sunrise and saying, God, so thankful that I'm here to see this sunrise. And then you can come back and do more work and more social justice work and more talking to people. But every now and then, just stop and look at the sun rise and the sunset. And I was going for my run today and I looked up and I'm like, man, I actually had to like stop, which screwed up my time, you know, but I had to stop and like look, and I was like, man, the pinks and the blues. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I just look in, I'm like, tomorrow the sky will be a completely different sky. It's like,
yeah,
like,
not gonna be
how
the same
much
one.
Of a miracle is that? You know, I mean, it's like, it's just like, it's mind blowing to think about the miracle that is your body and like the miracle that is this whole like freaking universe. And there are really crazy, terrible things happen. We can't like stop thinking about how wonderful this whole existence is, you know, in its entirety. It's beautiful. You know, it really is.
Yeah.
Like, we have to pause and reflect on that every so often so that we don't get so caught up in thinking that it's just so terrible, because it is terrible. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There is that stuff, but man, it's so beautiful too.
And it's just finding those balances.
Yeah.
Finding the subtleties between it all that allows
Eat
you to enjoy
delicious foods, you know, have great
enjoy those
sex
moments.
You know, go for a run, take a hot shower or a bath, you know, live. You know, it's like people are afraid to live now. It's we can't live off of the social media because people need to. I mean, there's times when I'm running because I have my phone because it has a stupid app on it. I hate that.
Yeah, I know. It's forcing you to.
You know, and like,
gotta break that and get one of those like smart running watches so we can just leave the phone at home and I'll just record it and then it'll download.
That, you still got something. You always had this tether. You know, it's like, and eventually I'm going to delete the app because, I mean, I do this for a while, like just to get myself into like a mode, and then I just, I don't need to know how fast or whatever I'm going. I know like how where the mile starts and stops, and I'm just going to do it. So
perfect.
And I just take my iPod, you know, which is a little bit lighter, and it doesn't like yell at me or buzz at me when a text comes in. Because there's
exactly.
times when I'll get like a note, like the phone will buzz because you can't turn off the, you know, you can't like put it in airplane mode because then you're not going to get your, the app doesn't work, you know,
yeah.
So like getting all your notifications when you're running, like, don't look.
Stop
it's like, ah,
don't look.
I looked. Ah, it's that person.
Put it on mute. Mute
yeah,
the sound and just have your music going.
I try that, you know, but then the screen blinks because I'm running like when it's going like getting darker outside, so the screen will flash. I was like,
put a piece
you know,
of paper.
No matter what you do, like, and you know, no matter what you do, like, you're gonna get that notification comes in. You're like, oh god, dang it!
Like, not again!
It's almost time to go. Time to get.
These things just fly by.
They fly by. So next time we're going to, I don't know what we're going to do. Well, we're going to be going on hiatus because I'm going to D.C. again. So we're going to.
Yeah, when do you leave for D.C.? What's that
leave for
schedule?
I'm still working the schedule,
mm-hmm.
but roughly about mid next month through mid-September. So I'll be in D.C.
Oh.
about a month.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be getting back there September 1st.
Yeah, I'm going to be there through like the 15th of September. So I'll be there for quite some
time. Great. Yeah, Nathan, you and I definitely need to go find ourselves lost away from the city, go hiking or something.
Yeah, that'd be
get
awesome.
Get away from Facebook, do something
we'll
along
do some
those
yoga.
Lines.
Yeah, we'll do something
maybe
crazy.
Maybe get a meetup together or something.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
But.
Yeah, we got to do your Reiki master too next time.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking that. I'm like, wait, 2 weeks? You're going to be there? I should probably start brushing up on my Reiki practice again. This might
yeah.
be the opportunity I've been waiting for.
I was going to do it that day we were sitting outside. I just forgot. Like, I was just going to do your tomb right there. Like,
oh, God, just throw it on
but,
me on the spot.
I was just going to do it. I was like, fuck, we just need to, because I didn't know when I would see you again. It's like, we got to do this now because I don't like when we'll cross paths again. But now that we'll be there, this time we'll do your Reiki master attunement. So you'll be a Reiki master.
Oh. Perfect.
So that'd be good.
Watch out, world. I'll be
watch
be coming
out,
for
world.
You now.
Watch out. So, any closing thoughts for the people out there?
I mean, at the end of these, it's always pretty much the same. It's just I have this need for wanting to break away from technology for a little bit. Just everyone get that balance.
Yeah.
Like, just know when to use it and know when to walk away from it when it's becoming detrimental to you. And I think work on developing that balance, whether it's through journaling or just actively paying attention to the state that you're in at the time. But just knowing when to walk away from these social media or situations that you might find yourself in.
Yeah. So next time I think we'll talk about, like, you know, we'll talk.
Yeah.
Healing.
Kind of surprise people.
Yeah, we'll surprise people. But anyways, everyone, thank you all. My parting words are the same thing. Get offline for a bit. Digital detox if you have to. Delete your apps from your phones. Whatever it takes. and you are all love. Love you.
Absolutely.
You. Namaste.
Bye, everyone.